This Family Life News Podcast is made possible by the support of listeners like you.
It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Whistleblower on the Hill. Good afternoon. A former Boeing engineer testifying before Congress today about safety concerns with the plane maker. At issue is a particular kind of Boeing aircraft, the 787 Dreamliner.
This is a plane that has safely flown hundreds of millions of passengers worldwide, but he says it has a flaw that could lead to catastrophe if it's not addressed. Boeing says that is simply inaccurate and false.
Correspondent Tom Costello, Boeing whistleblower Sam Solopores worked 15 years at the company and says there are potentially deadly design flaws with the Dreamliner.
When the plane can break apart in altitude and drop to the ground, I think that's a safety issue. That's exactly what's at stake here.
But Boeing is pushing back. It claims the Dreamliner is safe and concerns about the structural integrity of the aircraft are inaccurate. The flying public, it says, has nothing to fear. Also on Capitol Hill, articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas are now before the U.S. Senate. 100 senators are being sworn in today as jurors for a potential trial. House Manager Mark Green says Mayorkas has failed to enforce immigration law at our southern border.
Alejandro Mayorkas has continued in his refusal to comply with the law and thereby acted to the grave detriment of the interests of the United States.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz.
Every week we see another horrific crime committed by criminal illegal aliens that Joe Biden and Alejandro Mayorkas continue to release.
This case marks the first time in nearly 150 years that a cabinet secretary has faced an impeachment trial in the Senate. However, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is expected to dismiss the charges.
Impeachment should never be used to settle a policy disagreement. Talk about awful precedents. This would set an awful precedent for Congress.
Brandon Judd with the National Border Patrol Council.
This is not a policy dispute. When you look at the law says that if you do not have a legitimate claim to be in the United States, you shall be removed. That's the word that's used in the law. You shall be removed. And he's not doing that.
8 million migrants have entered the country illegally since Joe Biden became president. The president of Columbia University is testifying before Congress today about the school's handling of anti-Semitism. Columbia's made controversial decisions regarding campus protests ever since the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel. Massive anti-Israel protests have turned anti-American across this country. Some demonstrators are now facing criminal charges for blocking traffic in major cities. Correspondent Lucas Tomlinson says this could be a sign of things to come.
These nationwide protests could be a preview of what's to come this summer at the conventions and represent a challenge for President Biden and his handling of the Israeli-Hamas war and the conflict with Iran.
The Biden administration's under pressure from the far-left factions of the Democratic Party to curtail support of the State of Israel for the ongoing war in Gaza. British Foreign Secretary David Cameron says Israel needs our support now more than ever.
The situation is very concerning. It's right to show solidarity with Israel. It's right to have made our views clear about what should happen next, but it's clear the Israelis are making a decision to act.
Iran today threatened a massive response if Israel retaliates in the tiniest of ways for Saturday's failed attack by Tehran on the Jewish state. Almost halfway there. Seven jurors have been seated with another nine to go in the hush money trial of Donald Trump.
There are four men and three women. All of them live in New York City. Their professions include a salesman, an oncology nurse, two attorneys, a teacher, a software engineer, and an IT consultant.
Reporter Brooke Singman, the judge in the case, is running a tight ship, as we hear from correspondent Robert Costa.
Tensions flared when the judge, Juan Mershon, Iran heard Trump audibly uttering something as his attorney questioned a potential juror. The judge chastised Trump's behavior, saying, "I won't tolerate that."
The former president spoke to supporters last night on the streets of Harlem.
Every legal scholar, every legal pundit said there should be no trial. This is not, there was nothing done wrong. This is all politics.
A gag order prevents Trump from disparaging witnesses or court officials during the trial, which could last well into June. The Supreme Court heard arguments yesterday in a case that could affect the convictions of hundreds who stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. Here's reporter Scott McFarland.
Prosecutors have argued successfully over the past 3 years that these defendants obstructed the official electoral count on January 6th. But one of the defendants, a former police officer charged with being part of the mob, successfully appealed, saying that charge doesn't quite fit.
Our coverage continues with correspondent Jared Halpern on Capitol Hill.
Justices questioned attorneys over the intent of a law passed after corporate scandals that makes obstructing an official proceeding a federal crime. Justice Neil Gorsuch.
Would a heckler in today's audience qualify, or at the State of the Union address? Would pulling a fire alarm before a vote qualify?
The government's attorney acknowledged the novel use, but argues the circumstances surrounding the riot cases haven't occurred before.
To date, more than 1,000 defendants have been charged with crimes for their role in the January 6th Capitol attack. Bank of America is accused of debanking conservatives because of their political views. Steve Curtis was refused service because he runs a ministry that trains pastors.
And they gave no reason other than to say that we were engage in a type of business that they had chosen not to service. And so we don't know anything as to the why.
Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita.
When you offer a commodity on the King's Highway, you have to offer it to all the King's subjects on the highway. So what they're doing here is very discriminatory.
Rokita is among 15 attorneys general that have sent a letter to Bank of America demanding it cease and desist with its discriminatory policy. Former Florida Governor Bob Graham has died. The Democrat served 3 terms in the U.S. Senate as well. Reporter Dave Wagner.
Graham chaired the Senate Intelligence Committee following the 2001 terrorist attacks and opposed the invasion of Iraq. He also ran for president in 2004.
Bob Graham was 87. A federal appeals court has just ruled that West Virginia's transgender sports ban violates the rights of a teenage athlete who's been taking puberty blockers since the third grade. Supporters of this law argue allowing biological boys to compete against girls is unfair to female athletes. Still to come on the Noon Report, a midweek edition, Biden and Trump in New York and PA. Cop killer used illegal weapon and another cop shot in Albany.
Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Williams. We're tracking showers, couple of thunderstorms. We'll have forecast details coming up in 10 minutes.
All right, Kevin, we'll check in on you then. Let's check the stories next that are making news across New York and Pennsylvania. Police in Albany investigating an officer-involved shooting. Chief Eric Hawkins calls it an ambush. A cop was shot this morning while making a traffic stop near the College of St. Rose. The suspect was killed. The police officer expected to survive. The weapon used to kill 2 cops in Syracuse this week was illegal. That AR-15 had a 40-round clip, which violates the SAFE Act. Syracuse Police Officer Michael Jensen and Onondaga Sheriff's Deputy Michael Husak were both shot while investigating reports of a stolen vehicle at a home.
I believe that people have come into a new level of brazenness towards law enforcement, and if that doesn't scare our community, I don't know what will.
Monroe County Sheriff Todd Baxter.
These guys and gals put on this uniform daily, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and never know exactly what's coming and if they're going to go home.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul.
We support funding the police. We honor them. We praise them for being able to do it. Very few people are willing to do. And this was a statewide tragedy, and our hearts are broken.
Officer Jensen will be laid to rest on Saturday. Lieutenant Husak's funeral is next Monday. The cop killer was shot dead during the exchange of gunfire Sunday evening. President Biden continues to crisscross the Commonwealth ahead of next week's primary election with a stop today in Pittsburgh. He'll hobnob with steelworkers this afternoon in the Burg. To tomorrow the president visits Philadelphia. He was in Scranton yesterday. Donald Trump is campaigning in New York City while dealing with his criminal hush money trial. Here's reporter Scott Pringle.
On the second day of his trial Tuesday, Trump visited a bodega in Upper Manhattan where a store clerk was originally charged with murder for stabbing an attacker to death. Trump, in front of a crowd, said crime has gotten out of hand in New York.
I love this city, and it's gone so bad in the last 3 years.
He said his so-called hush money trial is really about keeping him off the campaign trail.
This is all politics. This is coming out of the White House, and, you know, it makes me campaign locally, and that's okay.
Meanwhile, several jurors have been selected in Trump's trial. Scott Pringle, New York.
New York's highest court hearing oral arguments today on the constitutionality of an abortion requirement. The state requires insurance companies cover abortions unless religious exemptions apply. Pro-life employers argue those exemptions are too limited and Christians are forced to pay for a procedure that violates their religious convictions. New York's proposed Medical Aid in Dying Act has received a high-profile endorsement.
The Medical Society of the State of New York supports the act that would allow terminally ill, mentally capable adults who have been given 6 months or less to live to take their own lives with a cocktail of pharmaceutical drugs. Many patients with terminal diagnoses are supporting the bill, but there is strong opposition from groups, especially people with disabilities, who argue the law does not do enough to protect them from being pressured into the procedure. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
An arrest warrant's been issued to a Pennsylvania state lawmaker for violating a restraining order. Philadelphia police issued the warrant for Democrat Kevin Boyle. A few years ago, Boyle was charged with harassment for showing up at his estranged wife's home. At that time, House Democrats said Boyle had ongoing mental health challenges. A school board in a Buffalo suburb last night adopted a controversial school budget.
Students, parents, and staff filled the boardroom at West Elementary School in West Seneca last night as the school board voted to adopt a budget that calls for 47.5 job cuts, including 19 teacher layoffs. The spending plan includes a $5 million shortfall, and despite public opposition, the board voted unanimously in favor of the budget. There will be 19 teacher layoffs and 11.5 more through attrition. 10 non-teacher position layoffs and 7 non-teacher cuts through attrition will also be made. Dee Haley, Family Life News.
Pennsylvania now permits a 4-day school week. A new law allows extended hours Monday through Thursday or Tuesday through Friday to meet the hourly instructional requirements. Nationwide, nearly 900 school districts in 26 states have abbreviated schedules. Well, summer's just around the corner, but one Pennsylvania town might be losing its decades-old summer hangout spot.
Armstrong County, Pennsylvania has a problem facing many communities across America, a critical shortage of lifeguards and pool staff for the upcoming summer season. The county's Belmont Complex, open for over 60 years, may not open this year as the county has received a limited number of applicants with only weeks to go before hiring begins. This jeopardizes the ability to open the pool. The county is urging anyone interested in lifeguarding or pool staff positions to apply by April 26th on the Armstrong County website. Brian Querry, Family Life News.
A Lycoming County, Pennsylvania man's about to embark on a solo boat trip down the Susquehanna River. Photographer Michael Kinney plans to start his freshwater odyssey in late April. He'll launch his canoe in the water in the tiny Indiana County town of Cherry Tree and plans to paddle 227 miles to Packers Island in Sunbury. Kinney's trip will take him through 9 counties and 19 river towns. The journey should take some 3 to 4 weeks to complete. The 2-minute drill's next in sports on the Family Life Noon Report.
Good afternoon. I'm Randy Snavely. Bob, the NBA's play-in tournament tipped off last night, and the Lakers locked up their spot as the 7th seed in the West. They beat the Pelicans 110-106 in the Big Easy. Zion Williamson, a huge night for New Orleans. He had 40 points, but after tying the game at 95 with 3:19 to play, he was injured and had to leave the game, and LeBron James and company pulled out the victory. James finished with 23 points. Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors season is done. They fell to Sacramento 118-94. On the ice, the Washington Capitals clinch the final playoff spot in the East as they edge the Flyers in Philly 2-1. Philadelphia had to have a win, so they pulled their keeper for an extra attack man, but TJ Oshie wrecked that strategy, and the Flyers' playoff hopes scoring an empty netter with 3 minutes to play. That broke the tie and sent Philly home and the Caps into the playoffs. To baseball, the Blue Jays beat the Yankees again, and they clinched a series victory with a 5-4 win. Other winners in the American League, the Tigers, Orioles, Rays, and Guardians. In the National League, the Mets won their third in a row, a 3-1 victory over the Pirates. Now over 500 for the first time this season, the Amazons scored all three runs in the seventh inning. Joey Wendell and Jeff McNeil both had RBI doubles in the win. Ranger Suarez tossed a complete game shutout, striking out eight. And Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto both went deep. The Phillies shut out the Rockies 5-0. The Marlins, Padres, Dodgers, and D-backs, your other National League winners. The Braves, Cards, and Mariners won interleague contests. That is a look at sports.
Okay, Randy, thank you very much. And still to come on the Noon Report, Trump campaigns in Harlem, NPR fires back, and blowing the whistle on Boeing.
Welcome to Breakpoint, a daily look at an ever-changing culture through the lens of unchanging truth. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. In the tumultuous era of World War II, amidst the chaos and all the uncertainty, Clive Staples Lewis offered a voice of reason and faith to a nation that was under constant threat. It was the BBC that asked Lewis to give a series of radio broadcasts in response to what they perceived to be a pressing need for both moral guidance and spiritual reassurance. From 1941 to 1944, Lewis gave a total of 25 of those radio addresses. The last aired 80 years ago this month. These talks were later compiled into the best-selling and much-beloved book, Mere Christianity. And of course, the reach of Lewis's thought expanded beyond these radio broadcasts. He's perhaps most well known for the fictional children's series, The Chronicles of Narnia, that were published between 1950 and 1956. These delightful stories depict the Christian story of the world. In fact, among the most consistent themes in all of Lewis's writing is the truth and the relevance of Christianity for all people and all times. Lewis recognized that the truths of Christianity held the keys to the moral dilemmas and the existential questions of his time. During the broadcast, Lewis presented Christianity not just as a set of dogmas or rituals, but as a worldview that could withstand scrutiny and bring hope. With typical clarity, he articulated the timeless truths of the Christian faith in a way that appealed to both believers and to skeptics. His approach was marked by clear writing, by logic, by a deep understanding of human nature. And he had a way of making complex subjects simple without being simplistic, perhaps seen best in his ability to confront logical fallacies with good humor and common sense. For example, he wrote this, quote, "Creatures are not born with desires unless satisfaction for those desires exist. A baby feels hunger. Well, there is such a thing as food. A duckling wants to swim, and there's such a thing as water. Men feel sexual desire, and there's such a thing as sex. If I find in myself," he wrote, "a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, well, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world." Lewis's ability to use this vivid yet plain imagery to drive home important concepts was a hallmark of his brilliance and his skill that flowed from his view of the inherent link between truth and imagination. Lewis's work has left a legacy that has spanned so far at least 80 years, and most likely will beyond this into the future. Mere Christianity remains a bestseller, one that's a consistent feature on lists of the top Christian books of the last century and often cited by notable pastors, thinkers, and authors. For example, the late Tim Keller said, "Lewis is a man of imagination. No one's ever said what he said as well as he did." Lewis's legacy is about much more than just being a man who became famous. It's about the timeless impact of truth when carefully applied to the cultural moment. He lived in a time and place that was in desperate need of hope, and he offered that hope by articulating what was true about life and the world, the truths of the Christian worldview. Of course, there'll never be a time when truth is not needed, but it's most needed in moments like ours, when truth is rejected, relativized, and subjectivized, in which contextual
feeling is prized above all else. This is why he remains relevant today. We may not face the imminent dangers of Nazi bombers overhead, but we do live in a time that's filled with many other sources of uncertainty and unrest. Just as in Lewis's day, the hope offered by Christianity is the antidote to the anxiety in which our culture swims. It's no surprise, then, that Lewis is still read by millions, Christians and non-Christians alike. It's no surprise that his legacy endures, as we strive to apply what is true to our cultural moment, like he did. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
Thank you, John. Let's take the show outside next. Kevin Williams.
Here is your family life weather forecast. The call for this afternoon. I've got cloudy skies with showers crossing the area into tonight. Parts of western New York and western Pennsylvania could see a thunderstorm. High temperatures today through the afternoon ranging anywhere from the upper 50s to the upper 60s, dropping back only toward 50 tonight. Tomorrow, a couple of showers around mainly in the morning. A few breaks could develop in the clouds. High temps, 50s and low 60s. Got some more showers on Friday with high temperatures mid-50s to the middle 60s.
All right, April showers bring May flowers, or so we hope. Thank you very much, Kevin. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. Lots going on Wednesday, the 17th of April. U.S. senators are being sworn in as jurors today at the impeachment trial of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. That trial may be short-lived, however. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer promising to dismiss the charges. Mayorkas was impeached for his alleged failure to enforce immigration law at the southern border. There's upheaval in the House surrounding Speaker Mike Johnson.
I am not resigning. It is, in my view, an absurd notion.
The Speaker is responding to the latest challenge by Kentucky Republican Thomas Massie. Massie joined a motion by Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene to remove Johnson. Massie is upset that Johnson is moving forward with Ukraine aid as part of a series of revamped foreign aid bills. It would only take three Republicans to potentially boot the Speaker, given the GOP's shrinking majority. And that's assuming all Democrats vote against him. This time, though, some Democrats do appear willing to save a Speaker Johnson if a motion is triggered, which was not the case when Kevin McCarthy was ousted last fall.
Correspondent Nicole Killian. The hush money trial of Donald Trump in recess today in New York City. Reporter Laura Jarrett has the latest on the legal drama.
Seven people now officially sworn in as jurors to hear the people of the state of New York versus Donald J. Trump. A cross-section of Manhattan residents openly revealing their views of the likely GOP nominee as Mr. Trump sat in court listening to lawyers spar over who could be fair and impartial.
The former president hit the campaign trail last night in Harlem. He visited a bodega to shine the spotlight on District Attorney Alvin Bragg's so-called soft-on-crime policy.
Every week they're being robbed two, three times. It's crazy. It's crazy. And you know what? The police can stop it, but they have to be allowed to do their job.
Trump's not allowed to leave the city during the trial, which is expected to last well into June. A whistleblower testifying before Congress today about safety issues at Boeing following a series of terrifying mid-air incidents.
Would you put your family on a 787 right now?
I would not.
Sam Solopor is a former Boeing engineer and accuses the company of cutting corners when it comes to safety.
If we have another crash, I am not sure if Boeing can survive that or not. And that's what I'm trying to prevent.
The allegations follow an incident in January when a door fell off a Boeing plane mid-flight. 29 passengers on that flight are suing.
The common theme in all these issues is that Boeing is putting profits ahead of safety.
Mark Lindquist is the attorney representing those passengers. At issue today in the Senate hearing is the 787 Dreamliner. Boeing claims the plane is safe and the flying public has nothing to fear. Lots of rhetoric, but so far no retaliation by Israel for what Iran did to it over the weekend. Correspondent Trey Yinks.
Israel is now faced with a challenging decision about how to respond. They're threading a needle between regional war and sending a message to Iran while avoiding broader conflict. Iranian officials are threatening to attack Israel again if there is any military action taken against their country.
Iran launched more than 100 missiles at Israel on Saturday. None hit their target. NPR has suspended a senior editor after he publicly criticized the network's liberal bias.
Are they suspended?
suspending this man because he, in my opinion, rightly pointed out that they're an insulated group of liberals who think they're right about everything.
Fox News analyst Juan Williams used to work at NPR.
Are they suspending him for that, or are they suspending him for going outside of NPR without approval? And he's not appealing the suspension at the moment, but they said it was a warning that could lead to his firing.
Tennessee Senator Marsha Blackburn is planning new legislation that would withhold federal funding for NPR for its actions to suspend that senior editor. Red Lobster may be filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection.
A Bloomberg report says the seafood chain is considering filing to restructure its debt, renegotiate leases, and shed some long-term contracts. Inside sources say a final decision on restructuring hasn't been made yet. Red Lobster has hundreds of locations across the U.S. and Canada. The company has not commented on the report. I'm Mark Mayfield.
College basketball star Caitlin Clark was the first pick in the WNBA draft, but her $76,000 a year salary pales in comparison to her male counterparts. Here's reporter Paul DeCastro.
Clark is Division I basketball's all-time leading scorer, but the University of Iowa superstar will make a fraction of the millions NBA players make. Clark will earn just over $338,000 over the next 4 years after being selected by the Indiana Fever. By comparison, Spurs rookie star Victor Wembanyama, the number one pick in last year's NBA draft, signed a $55 million four-year contract. As a result, social media is blowing up with people outraged by the glaring salary disparity between WNBA and NBA players.
You're listening to the Noon Report for a Wednesday on Family Life.
Welcome to another edition of Real Answers. Wednesdays during the Noon Report, we tackle the tough topics facing today's families with licensed Christian counselor Chris Anderson. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Sarah. How are you doing?
Today's topic is remarriage after the death of a spouse. In U.S. Census numbers among men and women aged 60 to 69 years old, only 23% report that they remarried following the passing of their first spouse. Chris, that's not a very high number. Why so low?
Yeah, Sarah. You know, I think there are a lot of factors that play into this equation. And just like there's no two snowflakes that are exactly the same, no two marriages are exactly the same. I mean, if you stop and think about what is involved in a marriage, it's two people coming together with differing personality structures, desires, dreams, strengths, flaws, you know, et cetera. You know, the whole package there. And the commitment to the relationship also is not always the same. So interestingly enough, there was a study done by Pew Research Center a few years back that showed that the older a person was who had to go through the loss of their spouse, the higher the chances that they'd consider getting remarried. And as a matter of fact, the highest category of people remarrying was the age range of 55 to 64. So there you have it.
What advice can you give to older folks who want to remarry?
Well, first of all, you know, some tips I'm going to share, it can also be applied to younger folks too, but, you know, first of all, make sure you're properly processing the grief that you've experienced with the loss of your spouse, okay? It can be an exceedingly painful time. And if you don't process this loss first and, you know, you've been able to heal from it, then make that a priority. Don't get into a new relationship right away. Get through that grief first. And if you need to get some professional help, secondly, discuss with a counselor or a pastor or just a godly friend about getting remarried, if this is something you might want to do. And you might only do this if suddenly out of the blue someone appears in your life that you might actually consider it. You know, a lot of people, not just older folks, say that when they're looking for that special someone, it just happened after they intentionally quit trying. But that doesn't mean that you can't consider it ahead of time and just give that some thought, you know. But at the same time, if you just don't feel like that's for you, that's okay. You know, there's nothing directly biblical that says you must get remarried or that you must remain single after you've lost a spouse has passed away. Thirdly, if you're up on technology, don't hesitate to use it. It's okay to use dating apps like eHarmony.com or Match.com or some of these dating apps simply because it's a way of meeting somebody. You still have to put them through the process of getting to know them and making sure that they're godly and that they're somebody you can really connect with in a way that's going to honor the Lord. And this last one's a big one, Sarah. If you're going to go this route, you need to have a non-negotiable list with terms that you really want to look for in somebody. Again, and first on that list should be this person needs to be a committed follower of Jesus. And I'm not talking about somebody who claims to be a Christian simply because they grew up in the church or that they go to services on Christmas and Easter. They need to be committed to the Lord. And then secondly, I'd also recommend that the second item on your list be that they have been widowed themselves. And simply because that way you're both kind of on the same page with this, and you're not going to necessarily look for this new person to take the place of your spouse that you lost, but that there is another place in your heart that they can fill.
What about people who don't want to remarry? Do you have any advice for them?
If you just don't want to remarry, and like I said a little bit earlier, there's nothing that says you have to. I mean, I've met with folks that are like, you know, my longtime spouse of 30, 40, 50 years passed away, and that's where I am in life. If you're not going to do that, you still got to stay connected. And I would encourage you strongly to get connected with church activities. And if you find yourself in a rural area, and I know a lot of our listeners do, they are in rural areas of New York and PA, that can be hard. You know, I'm going to put a challenge out there to churches that they look at this unique category of folks and help provide support for them. They can be, let's say, a support group for folks who have lost their loved one, or other activities for folks who are getting close to retirement or have retired, that type of thing. But, you know, really, this is a fantastic place for churches to help fill a void with a segment of the population that is really grieving and oftentimes very isolated because of how difficult it can be for them to reconnect. So definitely a place where churches can make a big difference.
Get connected. Great advice from Chris Anderson. Thank you so much. You have been listening to another edition of Real Answers on Family Life Wednesdays during the Noon Report. We tackle the tough topics facing today's families.
All right, Sarah, thank you very much. You can catch all of our Real Answers podcast, by the way, online anytime. Just go to familylife.org and look for the news tab on the podcast page.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Have the umbrella handy over the next several days. We've got some April showers ahead. Some of us will find a thunderstorm or two as a cold front swings through the area. Behind that feature, as we head into the weekend, it turns cooler and drier with some sunshine. The call for this afternoon, I've got cloudy skies with showers crossing the area into tonight. Parts of western New York and western Pennsylvania could see a thunderstorm. High temperatures today through the afternoon ranging anywhere from the upper 50s to the upper 60s, dropping back only toward 50 tonight. Tomorrow, a couple of showers around, mainly in the morning. A few breaks could develop in the clouds. High temps, 50s and low 60s. We've got some more showers on Friday with high temperatures mid-50s to the middle 60s.
All right, Kevin, thank you. Finally, at noon, time to go. B-A-N-A-N-A-S. Bree Tennis has more on National Banana Day.
Today, we celebrate America's most widely purchased fruit that isn't a fruit at all. Bananas are related to the lily family. The Mayo Clinic says we eat about 90 bananas a year. They're high in potassium, have about 105 calories, and they're only a little bit radioactive. The EPA says it's naturally occurring, and you'd have to eat about 275 to feel it. I'm Bree Tennis.
Radioactive bananas? Oh, my. Thank you very much, Bree. And that's the world we live in, folks. Wednesday, April 17th. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this Family Life News podcast. If you've been encouraged by what you've heard, please share it with others and click the subscribe button to automatically receive future episodes. Family Life is a listener-supported ministry. Podcasts like this are made possible by your financial partnership. Find out more at familylife.org.